Welcome to another episode of the Oncology On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Roman Fabricator. In this episode, Cancer Network's Ariana Pelosi spoke with Dr. Joseph S. Wallens, cardiology fellow at Weill Cornell Medicine, about a review he co-authored in oncology titled Cardio-Oncology Considerations for Breast Cancer, Risk Stratification, Monitoring, and Treatment. Wallens discussed the basis for conducting the systemic review, as well as noteworthy cardiotoxicities associated with specific classes of breast cancer therapies. He further outlined considerations for optimizing risk stratification and monitoring strategies in patients at risk, and highlighted future steps to enhance cardiovascular outcomes for those with breast cancer.
What was the background for this publication providing an overview of cardiotoxicity related to common breast cancer treatment?
Over the past few decades, there have been major strides in how breast cancer is detected and treated, to the point where now there's about 4 million women in the U.S. who are living with a history of breast cancer, and many of them are cancer-free. And as their survival rates have improved, other health risks, especially those unrelated to cancer, start to play a bigger role in long-term outcomes. The most frequent non-cancer-related death in patients with a history of breast cancer now is cardiovascular disease. There have been some studies that show that patients with a history of breast cancer have about a twofold risk of dying from heart-related issues compared to the general population. And those elevated risks show up as early as 5 to 7 years after initiation of treatment. Normally, we think about cancer treatments and certain forms of them, like anthracyclines and trastuzumab, as driving much of this risk. But there are many causes. And breast cancer, cardiovascular disease, they share a lot of risk factors. Things like age, high BMI, low physical activity, alcohol use. When patients that have breast cancer, there's already a higher background risk of developing cardiovascular disease. A major concern, and one that we focused on in this review, is cancer treatment-related cardiotoxicities. One major one is cancer therapy-related cardiac dysfunction, or CTRCD, which is a type of cardiomyopathy that's linked to many breast cancer therapies. It's a type of cardiomyopathy that spans everything from asymptomatic, mild changes to heart function to symptomatic, fulminant heart failure, which is one of the biggest feared therapy-related problems. Beyond CTRCD, other cardiovascular complications tied to breast cancer include ischemic heart disease, things like coronary artery disease, myocardial infarctions, pericardial disease, arrhythmia, and valve disorders. So the reason we wrote this review was an overview of the major treatment-related cardiotoxicities and some tools for helping to risk stratify patients, how to monitor them, and some strategies for prevention and management of treatment-related cardiotoxicity.
So what were some of the noteworthy therapy-specific cardiotoxicities as they relate to classes like anthracyclines, HER2-targeted agents, and other treatments?
Sure. I'll highlight a few. I can speak primarily about anthracyclines, HER2-targeted therapies, endocrine therapies, radiation therapy, and cyclin-dependent kinases, or CDK4/6 inhibitors. So anthracyclines have been a cornerstone of breast cancer treatment for multiple decades. They're still widely used across various subtypes. Their mechanism, which is DNA strand breakage and inhibition of topoisomerase II, is effective, but with cardiac risk. So cardiotoxicity is linked to topoisomerase IIb inhibition, oxidative stress, as well as direct cardiomyocyte injury. Risk typically increases with cumulative dose, with age, and baseline left ventricular function, as well as comorbidities. Combining anthracyclines with other cardiotoxic therapies like radiation to the left chest or trastuzumab compounds that risk. In early stage settings, doxorubicin equivalent doses of about 240 milligrams per meter squared is typical. But often metastatic regimens push for higher doses, and often it's at those doses that we see CTRCD. HER2 targeted therapy is common among breast cancer patients. About 15% of breast cancers overexpress HER2, and these tend to be more aggressive. Trastuzumab and pertuzumab are monoclonal antibodies that target HER2 and are often combined with other chemo regimens. Trastuzumab on its own carries about a 3 to 7% CTRCD risk, but that risk jumps up when paired with anthracyclines. So hormone receptor positive breast cancer, which accounts for over 80% of breast cancer, there are endocrine therapies, so things like tamoxifen, letrozole, and anastrozole, and they've been linked to dyslipidemia, metabolic syndrome, hypertension, and myocardial infarction. The ATAC trial showed higher cardiovascular events and cholesterol with anastrozole versus tamoxifen in patients with CAD. Tamoxifen has historically been associated with higher thromboembolic risk, but there's some more recent data that shows it may offer some cardioprotection. There was one meta-analysis that found that tamoxifen reduced CV risk by about 33% compared to placebo, while AIs actually increased by 19%. Radiation therapy is another form of treatment that's been linked to cardiac toxicity, especially when targeting the left breast, which sits in front of the heart. Pericardial disease, heart failure, valve disease, arrhythmias, ischemia are all sequelae of radiation therapy. Risk correlates to dose and location. Left-sided radiation more than doubles the risk for coronary artery disease. There's multiple mechanisms. There's direct damage from the radiation itself. There's the resultant chronic inflammation and fibrosis. There have been advances in dose contouring and respiratory gating that help significantly reduce cardiac exposure. Proton therapy may offer further protection, and the RADCOM trial is currently evaluating this. And then cyclin-dependent kinases, the CDK4/6 inhibitors, like palbociclib, ribociclib, and abemaciclib are used with endocrine therapy for hormone receptor positive and HER2 negative metastatic disease. They improve survival, but carry a risk of QT prolongation, especially when combined with letrozole. So cardiac monitoring with electrocardiograms is warranted for high-risk patients. There are some other therapies that carry cardiovascular risks that are used a bit less frequently. Immune checkpoint inhibitors are one, which are used in triple-negative disease. They rarely can cause myocarditis, which can have serious consequences for patients that develop it. Capecitabine, a 5-FU prodrug, is linked to angina, hypertension, stress cardiomyopathy, and myocardial infarction. And PARP inhibitors like olaparib commonly cause hypertension.
What are some of the key considerations for optimally risk stratifying and monitoring patients who may be at risk of experiencing cardiotoxicity associated with breast cancer therapy?
Most importantly is optimizing cardiovascular risk factors before initiating cancer therapy and identifying patients who are more than low risk. In recent years, there have been several risk assessment tools that have been created to help clinicians personalize therapy and guide decision-making. The European Society of Cardiology, ESC, cardio-oncology guidelines, they recommend several cardiovascular risk calculators, such as the ADVANCE, the SCORE2, the SMART, and ASCVD, which is commonly used to assess baseline risk. It's especially important for patients that are receiving high-risk therapies like anthracyclines, particularly when the dose is high. To further refine risks, the International Cardio-Oncology Society, ICOS, and the Heart Failure Association developed treatment-specific proformas, which incorporate pre-existing comorbidities, prior exposure to cardiotoxic agents, and biomarkers like troponin and natriuretic peptides. Patients can be categorized as either low, moderate, high, or very high risk. It's worth noting that these tools are based on expert consensus and real-world validation is still ongoing. For breast cancer patients receiving HER2-targeted therapy, a nomogram was developed by Dr. Anthony Yu, one of the authors of this paper, and it offers a more tailored approach for estimating the 1-year risk of CTRCD using 9 clinically available variables. It can help support early referral to cardiology or cardio-oncology specialists when needed. At baseline, things like a thorough history, a physical exam, electrocardiogram, and cardiac biomarkers and echocardiograms are recommended for to all patients undergoing high-risk therapy. And then lastly, clear communication of risk status with both the patient and the oncology team is critical. Low-risk patients can generally proceed as planned. Moderate risk may benefit from cardiology input to optimize modifiable factors. High and very high-risk patients should be referred for cardioprotective strategies before treatment and a thorough discussion of treatment risks. In terms of thinking about what to use to monitor patients before treatment with either anthracyclines or HER2-targeted therapies, all patients should undergo electrocardiogram testing, as well as thoracic echocardiogram, which will show how well the heart is pumping, so looking for the left ventricular ejection fraction, but also getting a baseline for things like valvular function and diastolic performance. For high-risk patients, we recommend getting a baseline troponin as well as natriuretic peptides, which can help guide which patients may need closer surveillance. During treatment, echocardiogram remains the cornerstone of cardiac monitoring, and routine imaging is recommended for all patients on anthracyclines or HER2-targeted therapies with reduced frequency for lower-risk regimens. Electrocardiogram is especially valuable for those on QT prolonging agents like the CDK4/6 inhibitors, and GLS, global longitudinal strain imaging on echocardiogram, may help signal early dysfunction. And there was a trial that showed modest benefit from GLS-guided cardioprotection. It is now being used more widely to detect subclinical cardiomyopathy. Other imaging options, especially when imaging of the heart is difficult via ultrasound, include cardiac MRI, and MUGA scans are still quite accurate, but less favored due to radiation exposure and advances in other imaging. After treatment, monitoring is still recommended because late-onset cardiac dysfunction can occur years after therapy. For patients, especially those treated with anthracyclines and HER2 therapy, we recommend repeating an echocardiogram and biomarkers, especially for high-risk patients, within 12 months post-treatment, and consider things like stress echo or cardiopulmonary testing for persistent exercise intolerance. Radiation is something that can increase coronary artery disease, so we recommend non-invasive CAD screening every 5 to 10 years for patients who have undergone significant left-sided radiation.
How can strategies such as neurohormonal agents, statins, and others help with the prevention and mitigation of cardiotoxicity in this patient population? And then how do you implement these strategies into your own care?
There have been a number of studies looking at prevention and treatment of cardiotoxicity in breast cancer therapy. And neurohormonal agents, which are frequently used for patients with heart failure and cardiomyopathy, have yielded somewhat mixed results. And so there have been a number of studies looking at beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, and ARBs. The PRADA trial looked at candesartan and showed modest protection against left ventricular ejection fraction decline, whereas metoprolol, a beta blocker, did not. The PROACT trial looked at enalapril, which is an ACE inhibitor, and it failed to prevent CTRCD in those patients. In HER2-positive patients receiving trastuzumab and anthracyclines, one study showed carvedilol and lisinopril helped preserve LV ejection fraction. And there was a recent randomized controlled trial showing that Entresto improved GLS at 6 months, but broader and more long-term validation is still needed. In terms of statins, the role of statins remains uncertain. There were two large randomized clinical trials showing no benefit of atorvastatin in breast cancer and hematologic malignancy patients with anthracycline treatment. But the STOP-CA trial did show that atorvastatin reduced cardiac dysfunction in patients with lymphoma that were receiving higher anthracycline doses. So for patients who are receiving significant anthracycline doses, the bar should be pretty low to place patients on statins. And patients who do need treatment for things like blood pressure control, the choice of medication should be guided by some of these trials showing favorable effects of beta blockers and ACE, ARB, and ARNI medications. Another medication that has been used to prevent cardiotoxicity is dextroxazine. It's actually the only FDA-approved agent for preventing anthracycline-induced cardiotoxicity. And patients get it when their cumulative dose of anthracycline exceeds 300 milligrams per meter squared of doxorubicin dose. There have been some concerns that some of the early trials with it showed that it may be associated with increased risk of cancer progression. But there have been multiple studies since, including meta-analyses, that showed no increased risk of cancer or secondary malignancies. And it's actually frequently used in the pediatric population, even at the start of treatment with anthracyclines, without an adverse effect on the cancer treatment. Other non-pharmacologic treatments include a slower administration of anthracyclines is safer than a rapid bolus in terms of its effect on the heart. And liposomal formulations lower the risk and are recommended for high-risk patients. Exercise has a promising role in the prevention of cardiomyopathy, but is not yet definitive. And so there have been several smaller trials that have showed that exercise may reduce functional decline. It may lower troponin rise post-chemotherapy. But longer term and more clinical hardpoints are needed to define the role of exercise for this.
And then, what are the next steps for improving the care of patients who experience cardiotoxicity associated with breast cancer therapy?
So additional prospective data are needed to better understand the role of currently available cardiovascular pharmacotherapy in the prevention and treatment of breast cancer cardiotoxicity. Another area that's interesting is genetic testing, which is currently not recommended for risk assessment of CTRCD. But additional research may help uncover whether there are certain variants in cardiomyopathy-associated genes, such as mutations in clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate potential, CHIP, as well as titin truncating variants that may predispose patients to treatment-related cardiomyopathy and may help risk stratify patients before they receive treatment to better connect them with cardiologists and get them on treatments to help prevent these toxicities and also monitor them during their treatment. So we may see in the future a more personalized approach to risk stratification and more sensitive and specific imaging surveillance techniques that may help us uncover some of these changes earlier. My hope is that we're able to better identify patients, monitor them, and treat them to prevent some of the more feared outcomes that we see.
What do you hope your colleagues take away from this?
Main takeaway is that cardiotoxicity is a major issue of breast cancer and breast cancer treatments. And as patients are surviving longer with a prior history of breast cancer and treatments and detection of breast cancer are improving, the competing risk of cardiovascular disease becomes very significant. Understanding a patient's risk profile upfront is crucial to help identify those at highest risk and those who would benefit most from additional cardiovascular testing, monitoring, and consultation with a cardiologist. And throughout the process, open dialogue, discussion, collaboration between oncologists and cardiologists, I believe, leads to the best outcomes for these patients.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.